The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Hello there, what's going on? Welcome back to the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and this is episode number 767. That is 767 of the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and I hope you are doing well wherever this lovely bloody podcast may find you. I hope you are doing swimmingly, hope you're doing fine, hope you're well hydrated, well rested, and all those things in between. That's all I really hope for you right now. I really do. How am I? Yeah, all good, all things considered. I cannot complain. I really cannot complain. It's been a bit rough over here and there, but you know, we get it done. I was actually checking on the social webs today, and I saw the one and only Rihanna, right? The one and only Riri, out here in London, actually, the other day, launching a new pair of Pumas. She's got those, you know, those Puma creepers that all the girls loved. I think back in the day when I was, you know, being a fucking playboy, I think I might have bought a couple of pairs for some ladies back in the day. They're some really, really nice shoes. Actually, I actually don't mind them. They're basically Puma Clyde, but they've got like an exaggerated thicker sole. Well, she's back again with Puma, with more of those Puma Clydes. This time, a bit more of a chunkier silhouette, and this time in more earthier tones. So she's back in London promoting it. Not sure why she picked London to promote these actual shoes, but I guess, you know, why the hell not. So she decided to come to London to promote these shoes, and I have to give this woman some credit, right? She came here, and I think I've seen like 100 videos already of Rihanna having interactions with different influencers and different noteworthy UK based people, and I swear to God, right, she must have literally exhausted her flipping socializing calendar, her social battery, her interaction battery must be absolutely depleted, because she was talking to the entire room. I think I saw a particular video where she did look to get a little bit tired, a little bit restless, but I'm also wondering at this moment whether motherhood is actually helping Rihanna. Maybe the fact that she's a mother now and she's somewhat, you know, softly retired from doing music. The fact that she's at home all day, probably legitimately looking after kids. Like, you know, Rihanna seems like one celebrity who I could actually believe does look after her own children. She doesn't probably have an army full of nannies and other nondescript, you know, South American, Central American women raising her kids. I can imagine that she spends a lot of time actually raising her children along with Rocky, along with their family, in-laws, and all that malarkey. But maybe the fact that she's a mum, it allows her the ability to step out to these events and not be tired. Maybe that's what makes it worthwhile. Because she's a mum and she's at home alone, just chilling. She's a bit older too. She's not a party girl as she used to be anymore. So maybe when she goes to these events, it's actually a bit of a socializing thing as well. As much as it's work, it's actually fun. I couldn't imagine it, to be fair, because it seems like a lot of social interactions. Like, you know, girls who are very picky about who they sleep with, and they call it soul ties. You know, there's some girls who are like, oh, you can't sleep with any random dude because you're making soul ties with strangers. That person's not involved in your life anymore. They could disrupt you from afar and do all sorts of weird juju, mad stuff in your life and whatever, which makes sense. And I think the same thing has to be said with just talking to people socially. There's only so much communication, so much of your own thoughts, ideas, whatever you can give to somebody else before it gets a bit shaky. So I think in this particular regard, maybe motherhood is helping Rihanna, because some of these interactions were hilarious, like this particular one I'm going to play you, but the rest of them were really, really awkward and weird, and not on her part, mostly because, you know, she's fucking Rihanna and you're getting to interview her at this kind of influencer event. It's going to be a bit random, but I think she handled it pretty well. So let's play a clip here of Rihanna doing her best British accent.
Oh my god.
We were going to ask you to say fat to
me. I'm so fucking embarrassed. It's going to be awful.
My big fatty creepers. Hashtag fatty. Can't believe you embarrassed me this way. You see, it only lasts for like 5 seconds and then it starts drifting into like Bayesian.
Okay, I don't mind that. So big up Rihanna in that regard. We see obviously rocking the blonde hair. We love to see it. Her hanging out with Ira Starr. That was a really fun interaction, by the way. So big up her. The actual outfit she wore, kind of looking like Billie Eilish, I'm not going to lie. Rihanna's kind of doing her best impression of Billie Eilish with that suit. But still, everybody kind of likes it. She told Ira Starr that she's got an open verse to send her an email and let her know she'll jump on the track. That was pretty cool. But yeah, it was all really fun. All really, really, really fun. But I can't lie, looking at these videos made me understand that, you know, as much as we like to say people like Rihanna and other quote-unquote influencers, because she's not really an artist anymore, she's more of an entrepreneur, businesswoman and all that stuff. But I think people like to say people like this don't really earn their money. But I think they do. I think they really do earn their money. They 100% earn their money, man. Because how many of us could really go to these events and just be yapping with strangers all day long and be okay with it? How many of us could be in these type of events and just be like yapping to people who feel like they know us, we don't know them, and you're having to give them all the time of the day? You have to make them feel like they're the center of the world. You also have to keep your professional influencer face on. You're trying to sell these shoes anyway in the first place. It's really, it must be difficult. It must be a job in its own regard. It must be, I wouldn't say it's a talent, but I'd say it's a skill. Definitely it's a skill to be a level of a celebrity, a level of a notoriety person at this type of level where you're having all these type of random interactions with people. And to them, it's like their main thing, right? They can't get over the fact that they've seen you. For you, it's just another day in the park. Like, she's probably done these events millions of times, jumping on a plane, heading over to London, jumping in a fucking black truck, heading over to the venue, doing this fucking meet and greets, right, to make it think fucking worthy, and then continuing on and on and on. And of course she was asked about her new album, like she always is every flipping interview. I have to say, like, as much as I love Rihanna and I love her union with flipping Rocky and stuff, and I'm a big fan of her previous albums, I'm not really waiting or eager or give a shit about her new album. I'm not gonna lie, I think music has kind of moved on. Even though she's amazing, I don't really know how many people are really waiting, actually, legitimately waiting for a new album. And there's every possibility that it might be terrible. There's every possibility that she's taken so much time away from music. When she comes back, it might not be good. So this idea that she should jump back into music just for the sake of it is a bit silly. I would love to know why she doesn't just say she's going to retire. I wonder why that's not allowed. I wonder if there's some sort of like stipulation in her contract that prevents her from saying, I'm retired. Maybe there is something, maybe there's some sort of clause you're not actually allowed to say it, like vocally, because she's act like she's retired, right? She's basically got, I think she's got 3 kids or two kids with Rocky at the moment. Business at Fenty is booming, better than ever. Rocky's now become a full-time influencer, you know, what you call it, guy in his own right. He does like music festivals just as like kind of top-up money for the kids, really. They don't really need the money, either of them. So what is the need to do the music, you know? Her legacy is already cemented. It doesn't feel like it's going to really add anything to anything. It just kind of, you know, make things a bit difficult for her in terms of how she's regarded, because whatever last album you put out, that's how people will remember you. They won't remember Anti, they won't remember all the other previous ones, they'll just remember the one that you dropped recently. So maybe there's a lot of risk, maybe there's more risk involved with Rihanna coming back and dropping the album than most people do believe.
Positions in the future, I mean, any plans to have RZA and Riot on your upcoming album?
I mean, thinking.
It's up to them. Yeah. I already got stuff that I feel like I can make hits out of.
Oh!
Yeah, really.
Give me more!
Me and Rocky are really, like, trying to figure out who's going to use what.
Really?
Yeah, because it's so good.
Wow, okay. She seems confident. She seems hyped that she's got some new stuff out that's coming. She didn't seem annoyed by the questions, because sometimes in the past she was quite annoyed by the same old question about when she's going to flip and produce, you know, when she's going to, you know, get, when the new album's going to drop. She didn't seem annoyed or pissed off in the slightest. So maybe there is going to be something on the horizon. But I don't know. I just think in general, you know, don't expect to see anything anytime soon. don't expect to see her anytime soon. And also maybe praying for her to, you know, come back and put music out might not be the reason why we want her back. I love this answer too that she put regarding her nipple era, regarding her, you know, more salacious era of her time. The fact that she's moving on. And I think this is a big part of maturity and a lot of things that nowadays has become a bit taboo, I feel like. People don't like to do this anymore. People are now trying to basically embrace the idea that we're all going to be forever young. There is no time limit to anything. You can do anything when you want to do it, blah, blah, blah. And I personally always have thought that there is a lot of grace in terms of hanging up the hat, in terms of hanging up your boots, hanging up your gloves, and deciding to move on to other things in your life. I think there's a lot of grace to that, especially when you do it on your terms, especially when you decide when you want to do it, not when the industry decides, not when your body, you know, starts to become appealing, quote unquote, not when you lose any kind of confidence. No, you decide, hey, I had some time, I had my hot girl time, now I'm a mum, now I'm a mogul, now I'm a businesswoman, now I'm an entrepreneur, things are going a different direction. So I loved her answer to this, I'm not going to lie.
Fashion hit. It's going to sound hypocritical, but because I did so much in my life. I had my nipples out, I had my panties out, but now those are the things, like, I guess as a mom and like an evolved young lady. Young, emphasis on young. It's just things that I just feel like I would never do, or I'm just like, oh my god, I really did that? Nips out.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with her. I think everything has its moment, everything has its time. I wouldn't say her era of having a nips out and shit was an ick. It was a period, fair enough, but she's now legitimately, as the caption says, a 36-year-old woman, basically. She definitely sees herself in a completely different light. And I'd imagine being a celeb, you probably age a bit different too. So even though she's 36, she's probably older than that because of how young she came into the industry, because of the amount of stuff she's accomplished, the places that she's been, the people that she's with, the business that she conducts. She's probably a lot older in reality than a regular, you know, 36-year-old. So it does make a lot of sense that she would say, you know what, I'm kind of, you know, I kind of look at that period and I'm like, you know what, not for me anymore. And I completely get it. I get it completely, 100%. So great to see Rihanna out there in the streets, out there in the streets of London, parading around, debuting, obviously, this new fringe that she's sporting, and obviously promoting that new Puma stacked Clyde that everybody's going flipping goo goo gaga. So I really do love to see it. Let's continue on from that. So next on the time, next on Lisa Checkout, let's talk about XXL. XXL did a really cool interview with Gunna, where he kind of opened up about everything that happened to him concerning the, you know, the YSL trial, the Young Thug snitching allegations, and all this malarkey. And it's a really cool interview, to be fair, but it also kind of reminded me of how unfortunate things kind of played out for Gunna, because part of me believes some of these, you know, crime, prison, you know, YouTubers who basically were suggesting that Gunna would have never done any hard time anyway. The feds basically brought him in to put pressure on the whole gang, because obviously they got everybody associated with YSL in on that RICO. But he was never going to face any real deep charges. Like, if he just would have sat down, kept his mouth shut, didn't do any of the pointing he did, or yes ma'aming he did in the courts, he probably still would have got out anyway. Maybe not as soon as he did, but he would have got out anyway, especially before Young Thug, you know, who hasn't had any bail for like a year or something. But other people are suggesting that what he did didn't actually cause, you know, any harm, and that the RICO case was always going to go where it's going to go, and that the courts had enough evidence to basically prosecute them as a gang anyway. So it wasn't like he was revealing anything crazy. But regardless, the perception of it is bad enough. So people now perceive Gunna to be a snitch. And essentially, you can tell because he hasn't hanged around with any other rappers, right? He's kind of come out from prison and he's kind of been on his own. Every time he's on, you know, there's a video of him outside and stuff doing his thing. You know, he's kind of by himself, just him and his assistant, him and his photographer. There's no horde of like rappers and hangers on anymore. It's a very small team, clearly, because people are trying to stay away from him, because that's the basically, you know, one of the rules of the streets. If you do snitch, you basically, you know, sometimes you come back around, but you're just not allowed to come back around us. Like, you know, no one's going to talk to you, no one's your friend anymore, just go and stay over there and kind of mind your business, which is obviously super sad, but I guess it kind of is what it is. So he kind of does answer a lot of questions around this and gives, I won't say a lot, but he does give some insight into his mental and how he's basically feeling. And it's also interesting because I remember when I was following this, especially with academics, academics was making it seem like if Gunna didn't come out and do an interview, his career would never flourish. And if anything, he's really proved that, you know, I think 6ix9ine obviously was the first person to prove it, but it really doesn't matter. Like, you can snitch and come back, you know, make sick records, and for the most part, your fans are still going to love you. He didn't need to sit down with Angie Martinez. He didn't need to do a Joe Budden interview. He didn't need to go on stream with Academics. He didn't need to go on stream with Kai Cena or Aiden Ross. He just came back, dropped some great tracks, dropped an album that people thought should have been nominated for a Grammy. It probably should have, but because of hip-hop politics and shit, it probably didn't get nominated as a Grammy. And then it kind of went where it went. So I do really give him a lot of flipping credit for that. So let's actually go through the actual thing. They actually asked him about how... how much weight he lost. He lost about 30 to 40 pounds. See what I mean about men? I've always said this before. I've always said that I think men, or just people in general, if you lost up to 50 pounds, or if you lost anywhere between 10 to 50 pounds, you could probably do a lot better. You could probably improve your overall looks more than going under the knife or something. The ability to lose that much weight and then have your dress size, your pant size lower a bit, completely opens up a completely whole different paradigm of options for you when it comes to clothes. So weight does really affect a lot of your style, a lot of your self-confidence, a lot of how your posture, how you carry yourself. So, you know, him losing 30 to 40 pounds, especially when you're a Gunner and you're into wearing loads of, like, you know, luxury designer clothes, you're into wearing a little bit of Rick Owens, you're into wearing a little bit of, you know, Chrome Hearts, all these type of brands, it's actually beneficial to lose a little bit of that weight because it opens up your ability to then be able to wear all these garms without having shit stretched out and shit. So men really could, you know, improve a lot of their fucking personal style by dropping 30 to 50 pounds, as you can see here from Gunna. And then suddenly now he's out here wearing vests with his arms out and shit. He's wearing way tighter pants. He's, you know, he's tucking his shirt into his pants probably for the first time in yonks, wearing shorts with matching vest tops and shit. So it completely went different. But I also have to admit, seeing him like this is a bit wild because, you know, it's also a reminder that Young Thug isn't out, right? While Young Thug is, you know, rotting in prison, essentially, without bail, waiting for his trial, Gunna's out here literally flourishing. That's the only thing that kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth, you know what I mean? It's a bit hard to take. Like, literally, he's out here flourishing. He hasn't looked healthier. He looks amazing. He looks like he's in actually a good mental space. He's probably doing fucking meditation. He's probably taking up yoga as well. Like, he legitimately looks really fucking good. So that's a really hard bit to take of it if you're a big YSL fan like I am, or a big Gunna, you know, and Young Thug fan, is that, you know, it kind of feels like he just abandoned, you know, Young Thug and left him there and went out and did his own thing. And, you know, since that, the other rappers have also kind of distanced themselves from him, which is a bit sad. But let's carry on with the actual thing itself, the actual article. It says, how did it happen? He said, less eating, especially when I went to jail. I lost a lot of weight, just like cleansing, detoxing. And when I got home, I started working out and just keeping fit. And now I'm on a year straight of all working out. So that is really the key to it, right? That's the key to losing a lot of weight, just not eating. Right? I can say for myself, like, you know, having been a fat shit and been a skinny shit, it really is the most important thing, the eating part, which is odd because I think when you work out, you realize quite quickly the most important thing to actually losing weight is the eating and not the working out. Even though the working out is hard and strenuous, I think most of us, myself included, could probably work out every day if we wanted to. Right, every day if we wanted to, for an hour max, we could do it 7 days per week. But can you stick to a diet 7 days per week? That's the hard bit. Can you only eat scrambled eggs and, you know, and fucking, what you call it, with some hot sauce on it, or bacon and sausages? Can you resist the urge of going to a takeaway? Can you resist the urge of McDonald's? Can you resist the urge of a sandwich, a this, a that, a muffin, blah, blah, blah? That's the actual hard bit about it. It's not the actual working out, which is wild to think, because working out is difficult, but the eating part is the worst. Where did you go? So, were you doing it before you got locked up, or did it happen while you were in jail as a way to change yourself? He said, I tried to work out for a second, but then I stopped for a minute. I just wasn't committed. Yeah, for sure. You'd imagine when you're in jail, you can't really think about it. That's probably the dream that I have, never being to jail, is that you go to jail and you become this amazing guy when you come out. But I guess when you're on trial for whatever they were on trial for, you've got so many other things in your mind, you can't really think about reinventing yourself. You can do one thing, which is maybe stop eating and kind of use that time to kind of cleanse yourself. And obviously, you don't have the drugs and shit anymore, so you have to kind of rely on other things to kind of center you. But you're not really thinking about, you know, reinvention and rebuilding yourself and self-actualization. You're not thinking about it. You just want to get out of fucking prison. It says here, the first images of you that were leaked after you got to jail, everyone saw in your body and was shocked. It must have felt good. He said, it was cool. I can't control. Well, I can control how my body looked, you know. When I got out of jail, you can't. So it was just like going to the motion. How are you maintaining your physical right now? First, you're in the gym. I've leaked online. Is it working out regular as part of your life? He said, yes, I got a trainer. I work out 6 days a week. I eat better. I eat clean. And that's something I'm disciplining myself for every day. It's something that I'm liking, though. I feel better when I work out. Exactly. He went from not working out at all to working out. So this happens a lot, though. If you're a dude that was fat, and I've been really, really fat before, like, you know, 260 plus pounds, and I went down to like 180 at what I'm kind of my skinniest. So when you do that the first time, it's incredibly easy to lose a bunch of weight just from not eating, just from changing your fucking diet. It works really fucking easily. It's incredibly easy to do, more easy than you probably think it is. It's probably wild. And obviously over time it kind of plateaus a bit, but the most important thing is just making sure you kind of tighten up the diet and shit. It continues. What does it mean to evolve as an artist? As I evolve, my music evolves. I'm not the same 24-year-old that I was putting out Drip Season 3. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm 30. I'm dropping Bittersweet and A Gift and A Curse. That resonates with how I'm feeling. Back then, I did it too. But that was for that time. So this time, I'm evolving differently. That's what's transpired with music. Oh, this feels like he's distancing himself a lot from YSL, isn't it? I'm evolving. I'm not the same guy as Drip Season. I'm not the Drip Season gunner anymore. Oh, this feels like he's evolving. He's trying to separate himself. You've had a lot going on. The case you're involved in with currently has a trial going on, and you can't really talk about much of it going on. But to touch on this article, what kind of question is that? So many qualifiers. You have a lot going on. The case you're involved in currently has a trial going on, and you can't really talk about it how much as it's ongoing. but too much on the whole thing and a bit of what happened to you. How did your legal troubles and the jail bid throw you off your career? He says, it did a lot. I had a real big effect on my career. As far as like shows, schedules, impact on like everything we had planned for rollouts, for albums, I had a lot to affect on that just because everything was being so high profile. But it's like, it's still going, you know? And I'm like in the motion of it right now. Yeah, that makes sense. Because if I remember correctly, he did link up with Pucci just before he went to jail and he was on trial. So it makes a lot of sense why he's saying what he's saying right now. So big up him. Big up him. So you got locked up, you dealt with it, you lose deals, lose business, you lost support, yes. So you're fighting on one side and fighting your business and livelihood on the other. What did that do to you? He says, I'm still fighting. We've got to go live in the moment of it. We've got to live in the moment of it. I can't stop and not stopping. What's your relationship with Young Thug now? It's the same. It's love always. Our relationship is our relationship. That doesn't feel good. What's your relationship with Young Thug now? It's the same. What does that mean? It's the same. When did you last speak to him? You know, I don't believe that in the slightest. I don't think they're friends at all. He definitely did snitch, according to Gunner. Sorry, Young Thug. I remember hearing that jail call of Young Thug telling people to like go at him on their album and stuff for the snitch and shit. So I don't think he was happy about it. And to be fair, the writing was on the wall. I remember this iconic clip of when they both got arrested and they both were in court via Zoom, and Young Thug saw Gunner on the screen. And Gunner didn't want to look up. He was like kind of avoiding eye contact. He kind of looked really sheepish. And Young Thug was like, hey, what's going on, boy? You look good. And Gunner kind of like gave him some weird smirk. But he wouldn't really want to look at him too much. So I think by that time, Gunner already had snitched. But, you know, he felt kind of guilty about it. That's my theory. It was a really strange video. And I think Young Thug also realized. I think it's one of those unspoken things that you realize when you're a street dude. You kind of see when people, you know, the moment they snitch, you can kind of tell. It's almost like that scene in The Last Supper, you know, when Jesus kind of realized Judas is kind of, you know, fucking betrayed him. And he kind of comforts him and shit. I mean, you know Wagwan. it's the same. People like Lil Durk, 21 Savage, Lil Baby, among others, have either commented about you're snitched or alluded to it in songs. Many people in media outlets have speculated that you are not cool with these people anymore. What's your response to that? Are you cool with them or not anymore? Let's see what he answers. None of those rappers, they're not on the case. They don't know legally what's going on. So basically, they're not cool. It doesn't really answer, but they're not cool. Have you spoken to these guys? I talked to like maybe two or three of those guys. I talked to them on the phone. Okay. So he's spoken to two or three of these guys. I don't believe it, to be fair. Peacefully or on good terms? Yeah, peacefully. A lot of people have opinions and comments on the situation. Have you ever thought that you've gotten a fair shake from people, and have you gotten a bad reputation that you don't deserve? I didn't feel like everybody's been misled. I definitely feel like everyone's been misled. I like, you know, when you're being misled, you got a chance, a choice to follow or make your own decision. And that's what's being shown right now. You're being a follower or you're being neutral to it. I don't know what their business is or what they really got going on. I don't see why he just doesn't. Again, obviously you don't want to admit you're a snitch. But I don't see why this is like a big issue. We saw what we saw. We saw the Yes Man videos. You know, we know the situation. Just admit you snitched and keep it moving. It's not a big of a deal. Or basically add some context to it. Like, oh, this is the deal that I was offered that would allow me to get some time out. When me and Young Thug were talking, we came to an agreement that if ever we did get hammed up, because I'm the artist and never been involved in the street shit, it's okay if I did so-and-so. Because that could be one suggestion. But the lying is just weird. Like, it's just intentionally lying about it. Makes no sense. But hey, what do I know? Some of these rappers put out songs with lyrics people think are directed towards you. Do you think they're about you? I honestly didn't hear the lyrics. You didn't even listen. Honestly, I didn't. But I don't listen to other rappers as much as unless I'm something, I catch my attention. Even before, because of my recording process. If I might like a song, I might fuck around and make the song a bad bitch song because I was just hearing that. So, like, I try not to listen to so many rappers, so I kind of do my own thing. Okay. Again, not too sure how much of that I actually believe, but it's good to see Gunna back in good spirits, and at least he is pushing forward and maintaining, because I think quietly he's accepted the fact that he's never really going to be cool with a lot of those people. I think socially or reputationally, a lot of those guys, even if they did speak to him on the phone, the Durks, 21 Savages, Lil Babies, they probably wouldn't want to be seen with him because it would ruin their street reputation. Even though they're probably cool, I could see a scenario where they could be cool with him in private, I don't think they'd ever want to admit it in public. Because it would make them look bad. It would make them look like they're co-signing a snitch. It would put into question everything they said about 6ix9ine back in the day. Because they're hanging out with him. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously then you're definitely like moving the goalposts. Because you're saying, oh, 6ix9ine can't snitch, but he can, kind of thing. So again, I don't believe that they're friends. I don't believe that they're cool at all in the slightest personally. But I also don't believe that it's an issue. So I think it's perfectly okay. I think it's perfectly fucking okay. What can you do? What can you bloody do? Absolutely nothing, I think. Absolutely nothing. Anyways, what else have we got going on here? Let's continue. So, I also wanted to show you this. This features a clip or a picture I saw on Twitter where it features Ye in his brand new Cybertruck, which I'm still thinking I kind of want. I'm not going to lie. I'm still thinking I kind of want this fucking car. It looks fucking gorgeous to me. I know people don't like it and it's really Marmite-y, but I think the Cybertruck, especially with the aero cap wheel things, because allegedly I remember I check out a couple of very prominent Tesla Cybertruck channels, and they've all said without a doubt that some reason this Tesla Cybertruck wheel caps are limited edition. They're quite hard to get a hold of. Tesla hasn't made enough, so they're still producing them. So a lot of the cars that you're seeing or Cybertrucks you see on the road don't have the little, you know, caps on them to cover the wheel. And I think that's what makes the Cybertruck look almost otherworldly, like it could be like a Mars rover or something. So without them, the Cybertruck looks a bit strange. So I actually like that Ye happens to have one that actually has the fucking wheel caps on it. So it looks fucking sick. I also like the fact that whenever I've seen a picture of Ye in a car, he's never driving. He's always got someone. So it's like a really nice car. You have like a fucking Lambo, a Mercedes or something, and you just have some other person driving it for him. I wonder what that's about. Do those people exist? Those people exist who like don't really enjoy driving, but they like sitting in nice things, so they'll get people to just drive them around in their nice car. I wonder if that's actually a thing. It must be, but it's strange to me because I'd want to, you know, if you have nice cars, the first thing you want to do is drive them around yourself. But I guess, you know, EA has a different process. But I really like the Cybertruck. It's unlikely it's ever going to come to the UK. If it does come to the UK, they basically said they have to change it dramatically to make it fit into, to make it fit with UK fucking road safety standards and Europe safety standards also. So most likely they would have to make it a little bit more rounded. It'd have to be smaller. So it would kind of take away from the entire design ethos of the Cybertruck and why, you know, Elon and Tesla decided to make it the way they made it. So most likely not happening. You know, those guys don't really like to compromise unless it's a compromise from internally, from internal, you know, an internal compromise. If it's, you know, governments and stuff telling them they can't do X, Y, and Z, they're definitely going to push back. So I don't expect to see the Cybertruck anytime soon in the UK. But if there was a possibility it could arrive here, I would be one of the first in line to try and buy one, along with the fucking new shape Ford Bronco, which I absolutely fucking love. But again, whether that's going to happen is another case entirely. Whether that's going to happen is a fucking another case entirely. But big up EA. Big up EA regardless. He was also at Disneyland hanging out with fucking young Leany's wife and a few other people. What's with the Disneyland thing, by the way? I haven't been to America. I haven't been to Disneyland. But is it really that fun? People go to Disneyland like every single day, like it's a, like, or does it just have an amusement park in it that's actually fun? Because I can't imagine going to a place like this so many times, you know, and having a good time. There has to come a moment where you kind of get bored over going on the same rides, going to the same things. Like, when does it get boring, or does it never stay boring? Like, honestly, is it like a thing that it just, you know, you just continue having fun with it, or there's a time where it kind of has to cap off? Because I personally wouldn't want to be going there all the time, unless I'm with my kids or something. And even with your kids, like, how many times can you go until you want to literally pull your hair out? But maybe I'm the one that's mistaken. Maybe I'm the one that's mistaken. And clearly there is a generation and a collective of people out there who are adult Disney fans, right? The ones who really start crying when they see fucking Mickey or whatever. So maybe they're the people that kind of keep this place afloat, because there has to be a finite amount of kids that can have, A, have parents that can afford to go there, have the time to go there, and B, want to go there. And maybe it is the actual adults who go there every other day to eat and drink who are actually keeping Disneyland alive. Either way, big up EA being at Disneyland, big up EA being at Disneyland. I want to play this clip, but I'm not going to play it because obviously it's really graphic, but I'm sure most of you have seen it. It's a really heartbreaking clip. It features a guy who allegedly was trying to stop somebody from getting carjacked, and then eventually his own car ended up getting carjacked by some dude, and he was a construction driver, I don't know, some sort of like handyman pickup dude, and the guy tries to run away with his car, and then the guy whose car it is decides to start shooting in the car. But I guess he wasn't confident, he really wasn't about it, he kind of was like almost aiming at him and not really, kind of aiming for warning shots. The guy in the car wouldn't stop. He kept on driving the guy's pickup truck. And the guy, for some reason, had no spatial awareness, had no kind of sense of danger. He decides to just walk around and just like wait. He should have went straight to safety. He should have ran straight into a building or something. But for some reason, he was feeling really safe. He didn't really feel like the robber was going to do anything to him. And of course, the robber then reverses the pickup truck and then like decides to ram the truck directly into that guy as he's standing in the way. He just rams it directly into him, knocks him flying, obviously, and the guy ends up unfortunately dying from his injuries. So he went in being a good Samaritan to help somebody, and then he eventually ends up dying himself, right? Because he got involved in this thing. And for me personally, it's another reminder, as I said the other day, of why most people should just mind their business. I know it's mad to say this. I understand it's crazy because the guy just passed away. But similar to the story that I shared the other day about, you know, being embarrassed and being fucking cringed out and being fucking mocked by these women who I was trying to help the other day, because I tried to be the fucking captain, you know, good guy, gentleman type of dude, and end up kind of blowing up in my face. Sometimes if you go into these type of things trying to be a good guy, it can sometimes blow in your face in a really big way. And in this guy's particular face, this guy's particular, you know, situation, he had an opportunity to blow this guy's brains out, right? He could have literally murked this guy in his car. But I guess he probably had second thoughts. He has a heart. He has empathy. He has compassion. So he then, I think, again, maybe his aim is really bad. But from where he's standing right there to where the guy is, which is essentially this passenger door, right? American cars are left-hand drive. So the guy is literally sitting here, unless he's leaning down on a chair or something, even though he should be able to aim and hit him here. It shouldn't be that hard. This car isn't bulletproof. He can easily hit at the doors and hit the guy and he's fucking dead. Just empty his fucking clip into him. But I think he didn't want to do it, which is why he purposely fired behind and kind of around him and not at him. But of course, he spared the guy's life there. But the guy, when it became his turn to ram the car into him, he didn't spare the guy's life, you know? That's a really sad bit about it. Like, he spared his life, but then when it came to his life being, you know, spared, didn't get spared. And luckily, the video, there's a thing in front. So when the guy gets hit, you don't see the actual car rolling on top of him. Because I'm assuming, apart from getting hit with that kind of impact, what actually probably killed him is a car rolling over him as he laid on the floor. And it's a really sad video because I don't think people realize until the end that the guy's dead. And I think when the other guys walk up to him, especially this guy, he starts waving because he sees the guy. He's probably discombobulated. His arms are probably in a different direction. His knees are probably inwards. Like, it's all going over the place. And luckily the guy got arrested who drove into him. So hopefully he goes down for many years. And, you know, thoughts and feelings and prayers go out to the guy who passed away. He did try to do a good thing and he ended up paying the ultimate price. You know, he ended up paying the fucking ultimate price. But again, like I said yesterday, about my situation in the gym and other situations, I think for the most part, people need to fucking mind their business. If you don't mind your business, this is what ends up happening. You try to be a good Samaritan, and then you ended up going out in this horrible way. So RIP to this young man for trying to help somebody and then getting his own pickup truck nicked and then getting run over with his own pickup truck and then dying. Like, fucking hell, what a horrible way to go. But bloody hell, if this is not a lesson about minding your business, I don't know what will. I don't know what will. I really fucking don't know what will. Moving on from that one, we've got this. This is a fucking really insane clip I'm going to play you. It features some North Carolina police officer who groped a woman's boobs as he was arresting her. And now the woman's obviously going to sue and, you know, they're going to try and see Wagwan. I have a feeling, like all police, you know, around the world, they're going to investigate this fucking horrible situation in-house. And then they're going to come to the conclusion that the police officer did nothing wrong. He might get some suspended time off, but that'll be it. But this is a pretty crazy clip. Let me play this for you. This is legitimately one of the most wild things I've ever seen. And obviously, Curtis, you read it. North Carolina police officer grabs a drunk woman's boobs, rubs his hand on her butt between her legs during a pat down after she's arrested for a DWI. All right. What does DUI and DWI? What's the difference between that? Isn't DWI driving while intoxicated and DWI is driving under the influence? What's the difference between influence and intoxicated? Is influence to mean drugs and intoxicated means drinking? Is that why? But how do they know if you're drunk or if you're high? I guess they test you when you're on the street, but when you blow, isn't that to see your alcohol levels? That's not really to see what drugs you're taking, right? Can they do roadside drug tests? Is that possible? Can they pull you over and see if you're like on drugs, like on in person, or is that something they have to do after the fact? Because this is pretty wild. Oh, alcohol. Okay, so Young Vibe saying alcohol v drugs. Okay, cool. Let's play the video. It's pretty insane. Pretty insane.
On September 25th, Raleigh police officers approached a 26-year-old woman at a gas station on St. Mary's Street, saying they suspected her of drunk driving. One officer searched her after she was handcuffed.
Anything on you that I got to worry about?
I don't have anything.
Nothing that's going to poke or stick me.
The woman's attorney, Karen Griffin, said she was appalled when she received the video from the district attorney's office as part of the evidence in the case. On the officer's body camera, you can see him unzip her jacket.
Jesus, I've never seen Christ. An officer touch my client's breasts.
Jesus Christ.
Shake them.
I appreciate your cooperation. Got anything in your pockets?
No, I don't have anything.
Then the officer moved to the woman's shorts. First, he touched her backside.
Can you face the car and step your feet apart for me?
What do you need?
Step your feet apart for me. A little further.
And that he made her turn and face the vehicle, asked her to spread her
legs,
then asked her to spread them further.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ, this guy's a fucking creep. If you're not seeing the video, he makes a girl face the car so her back is turned to him. He makes her spread her legs, and then he rubs the inside of her legs, and then literally does like a card swiping motion inside her VV or like outside. Like, God almighty. The weird thing is, isn't he there with other police officers? Why didn't they intervene? Didn't they see what was happening? Why didn't they come in and be like, oi, relax, bro. What are you doing? Why was he allowed to do this? Where are the brothers? Where's his colleagues? Are they all on their phones?
Further, and ran his hand in between her legs.
Are you probing for evidence, contraband, or a weapon?
Pete Rubino was a police officer for 30 years and is now the vice president of the Carolina Safety Resource Group, which consults with law enforcement agencies.
I've never seen an extensive search like that of somebody for a DWI.
Rubino says it could come down to training.
Wow.
If that officer really believes it's reasonable to do that, he or she might need to look at procedures again.
But Griffin is convinced it's about more than that.
In your opinion, is this a sexual assault?
Yes. I had no other opinion from the moment that I viewed it.
Unfortunately, searches incident to arrest are invasive by their nature in order to make sure that the officer is protected. It's a matter of officer safety.
Wake County District Attorney.
So it's looking like he might get off this. Again, police around the world are fucking wild, but American police might be the pinnacle. Because can you imagine this ever making sense, that you need to, like, cup a woman's bum like this, like, to search her fucking backside, like, in this manner? Is there any need for it in the slightest? Like, the way he runs his hands over her bum, there's a bit where he grabs her breast and you can't really see it on the body cam, but he's clearly shaking her breast. And it's like, bro, if we really wanted to see if she's got anything under her boobs, I'm sure there's a way to do it where you do it with, like, the back of your hands, with some level of giving the person some level of dignity while you're doing it. Also, I know, you know, you shouldn't be thinking about that because you're a police officer, but there should be a way to kind of search somebody with the back of your hands and not fucking be cupping her boobs like you're her fucking gay best friend and shaking them up and down. That is madness, bro. And he's with his colleagues too. Look, it's not only him. That's him in there. He's with he's with two other colleagues, and he just let him what? This is what they do in recent. So maybe I'm assuming because they are... Because you guys, I don't know why you have so many people. Maybe we have the same thing in America, in the UK. Again, because I don't drive. Maybe this is a common thing here too. But for some reason, you have a lot of people in America who love to, like, do drugs and get in front of a camera. Do drugs, get behind the wheel. I don't know why people love to do that. Whenever I've done drugs or I'm doing drugs, the last thing I want to do is be in front of a camera or be behind the wheel or even be on my fucking bicycle. I want to be laying down. I want to be in a chair somewhere, sipping a drink, listening to some music. I don't want to be like, you know, have all this stimuli. But for some reason, there are some freaks out there that get behind the wheel with the first thing. I wonder if this is a common thing with police. Because they're all fucked anyway, the people they're stopping, they're either drunk or they're high. They're probably thinking, most of them won't remember. If they do remember, it's going to be admissible in court because they're under the influence. No one's going to take their testimony seriously unless there's body cam footage. And if there is body cam footage, you can still contest it because technically you can say, they were belligerent, they were drunk, they were sloppy. I was trying to protect myself as a police officer because I guess again, I'm just speaking out loud. I don't know what I'm talking about here. But I would imagine in, like, police procedures, when a policeman stops you, their safety has now become the priority. Like, in their interactions, they're the ones that are the ones that should be looked, they're the ones that should be looked after. So if you pose a threat, they need to neutralize you. I think that's what happens in interactions, I would assume. So in this particular situation, they've identified somebody who might be a problem, who might be a risk. And then I guess in their heads, what they're doing justifies them doing it because it's making sure that they're safe and that they can go home to their kids at night, I'm assuming. But fucking hell, bro, this guy was legitimately going fucking brazy. Like, this particular bit is where, like, okay, cool. Now you're, like, the fact that he's isolating her and taking her away somewhere, away from fucking prying eyes, is another thing. The unzipping of the jacket, the way he did it.
Camera, you can see him unzip her jacket.
I've never seen an officer.
Then I guess that's a full breast grab. That's a full fucking breast grab right there. He's shaking them.
Shake them.
I appreciate your cooperation. Got anything in your pockets?
And then he rubs her bum like four times. He rubs her bum here.
I don't have anything.
Then rubs her bum there. Moved to the woman's shorts. First, he touched her back.
And then he makes her rub. And then he makes her rub her. He makes rubs her bum again when he splits her legs off.
Step your feet apart for me. Step your feet apart for me. A little further.
And that he made her turn and face the vehicle.
Honestly, this is insane. This is literally insane. And the thing is, he's not going to get any charges. I guarantee you this guy gets no punishment for this. Zero punishment. Like, he's literally running his hands in between her legs with his body cam on. It looks like a POV video, like, of, you know, from a Zorn site. It's like, bruh, don't you have any composure? Aren't you aware that the little camera's on? Honestly, thank God for body cams. Imagine what police officers were getting away with before body cams. Can you believe that? Imagine what police officers were getting away with without body cams. When body cams weren't around, imagine what they were getting away with. It must have been like, do you know when criminals say, oh, I'd love to have gone back to the 70s, 80s, 90s, when CCTV wasn't as prevalent or whatever, or readily available, and you could get away with doing crime, right? You can get away with getting, you know, get away with some fucking pre-audacious, you know, thefts and whatever. Imagine what police were getting away with before body cams were introduced. Before smartphones became widespread, actually. Because smartphones as well, another one, right? Some random person across the road could be filming you taking a piss out of somebody. But imagine, before smartphones and CCTV became accessible, police probably got away with so much shit. So much shit to probably get away with. Because this is insane.
Asked her to spread her legs apart, then asked her to spread them further, and ran his hand in between her legs.
Are you probing for evidence, contraband, or a weapon?
Are you probing? Nothing. What weapons are you going to find in between a puss like that? I'm sure it does exist. I'm sure there's some psycho women who do put guns up their snatch. But God almighty, bro. Like, honestly, what a fucking psycho. But yeah, police around the world, absolutely corrupt, absolutely horrible people. Again, procedurally, doesn't make any sense. Will he get any, will he get any consequences for his actions? Probably not, because people are fucking awful. That being said, on the topic of people being awful, have you guys seen this video? Have you guys seen this fucking video? This is pretty fucking wild. Can you imagine how embarrassed you would be? Number one, having to go into a vape shop. Number two, going into a vape shop that's also a mobile phone shop and then trying to steal a mobile phone. And then three, having the owners of that vape / mobile phone shop catch you red-handed and then lock you in a store and wait for the police to come. And now you're screaming through the door for bystanders to help you. And they get told, oh no, they're there because they stole something. Can you imagine how embarrassing this scenario is? Look how embarrassing this is. She's screaming. Call the police. She's screaming. And there's a massive cut. There's a massive, obviously, group of kids outside looking. And these girls are inside the shop going crazy because they've been caught stealing and the owner's not letting them out. I love the fucking stickers on the phone. Eid special. And the funny thing is, these are Asian girls also, right? Like, you know, I don't know what would you call that part of India? Is that Southeast Asia? That can't be. That's Central Asia? I don't know. India, Pakistan, whatever, right? So they're from the same community, same area of the world. And there's a sticker that says Eid sale on these phones. So imagine, people that look like you are the ones that always do you the dirtiest. They're in the store. They're going crazy, like. That's the thing I've always said. Oh, look, they're going to the tills, trying to make them do something, give up something. They're trying to get out. They're not being let out. And they're screaming. They're absolutely screaming and going crazy.
Yeah, 257 West Civil Road.
That boy looks like his shirt's been ripped. Maybe holding the girls back. They want to get let out, but they're not being let out. And one of the girls has a Nike tech suit on. Nike tech suits are like, you know, Black Air Force Ones in clothing. So you know what time she's on, right? This girl's got a fucking Nike tech suit on. You know what time she's on. When have you ever seen like an Indian Pakistani girl wearing a Nike tech suit? That's when you know she's on fucking timing. So clearly that's an issue there. But I've done my, you know, I've done my fair share of fucking five finger discounts over my time of life living on this fucking planet. And one thing that I've realized is that this is kind of a shitty rule because I think I'm probably making it up in my head. But I honestly think you should only do this type of shit in like big corporation stores. Like, you know, you go to a fucking Target or whatever and you know, you don't have the money for a particular item, whether it's something, especially something that you actually need to eat with or to kind of keep you alive. Fair enough. Little five finger discount is what it is. Big corporation, who fucking gives a shit? But trying to go to like a regular person's independent store where they sell vape pens and mobile phones and trying to steal from them, especially when they're people from your own community, that's kind of bottom down shit. And even that being said, I feel like there's like a level of karmic retribution that happens to you if you're suffering and you try and steal. I think there's something in there. I think when you actually have the money to afford it, but you just can't bother to save, you don't want to spend your money, I think that's when you're playing with fire. I think you should only, if you're going to dabble in five finger discounts, do it when you're really down bad. When you're really down bad, you have no other option, you're literally struggling, you know, you got no one to bail you out. Okay, cool, maybe. But to do this with random people who are just trying to make a living for themselves, I think it's some real sick shit. Like, you're a real piece of shit if you do that. Real, real piece of shit. So I don't have any sympathy for them for being caught the way they got caught. And now they're screaming, they're going crazy. They're probably on the phone. I don't know who she's on the phone with. Maybe they're trying to force the police to get there because they feel like they're going to get abducted and, you know, abused by these Asian dudes because, you know, there's bad reputations around, you know, groups of young Asian men, unfortunately. But I think this is just incredible. It's an incredible fucking picture. Look at these girls. Look at the fright. Look at the fright and the franticness and anxiety on their faces because now they've been caught red-handed and they've been, you know, stuck inside of a shop. There's nothing more embarrassing than this. Nothing more embarrassing than this. I can't imagine. They're screaming. Excuse me. It's mad because this girl's talking. She's in a phone shop and she's got an iPhone 14 herself. It looks like a Pro Max as well. She's got an iPhone 14. She looks like she's been washed and showered. She's got some makeup on. Her friends look like they've been washed and showered also. It's like, what are you stealing in there, girl? Like, you don't need to steal. You have the money to buy the things that you want to buy. You just probably don't have it right now or you don't want to save, but you're not damn bad that you need to do this. And now you guys look nuts. They're pacing around the shop. The owners are looking at them. And they're doing a good job, the guys. They're just not touching them. They close the door and they're just not touching them. That's a really good thing. Because the last thing you want is the police to get there and these girls to write another fucking soliloquy about how they were abused. Like, no. I'm not going to touch you. You're just not going to leave the store. You know what I mean? Until the police get here. You're not leaving the store. Respect. Now they're pleading with them. They're shaking. You fucking psychos. Look at that. Why are you recording? Look, this girl's got a Nike. This girl, you know, she's dangerous. She's got a Nike Tech hoodie on with no matching pants. She's got jeans on. If you're a girl and you have a Nike Tech top with just some jeans on, you're on some bad timing. You're a fucking thug. I have to hide my wallet. I have to hide my coin purse. I've got to hide my satchel. You're a bad girl. They don't know what to do. I will smash the door, I'm not gonna lie. I'm smashing the door. It's not that hard, man. Just couldn't you smash the door if you wanted to? Like, actually, because it's glass. If she kept running into it, could she just smash it? If you're that desperate. But I guess she doesn't want to get cut up, right? So you want to get let out, but you don't want to get a scar on your face. But if you really wanted to go, couldn't you just run full pelt? Run full fucking pelt. And just like with the corner of your fucking arm and just hope for the best. Just burst out of the fucking thing like a fucking wrestler or something. And just run all the way home from there, covered in blood and glass. Not looking suspicious at all. Open the door. Open. Help us. Okay, they don't look Asian to me. Now I've seen them up close. They don't look like they're from the same community. They look like they might be Middle Eastern, right? They look like they could be Middle Eastern or maybe a bit east of that. But they don't look like they're from Pakistan or India. I thought they were fellow people from their same places, but they don't. They look a little bit more of the lighter complexion, a little bit more European of features. Either way, they're embarrassed. Where's your money? What are they, Pakistani? Who's she calling on the phone? Nothing's gonna happen, bro. You're in the shop, you're locked until the police can arrive. Absolutely boss fucking. But again, I've only had one occasion where somebody pulled me aside for maybe slipping some shopping into my bag that I shouldn't have slipped into it. And it's way more embarrassing when that happens than, you know, anything else, because you still have to pay for it anyway. And then everyone sees you, you know, it's like, it's super embarrassing. But at least then they just let you pay for it and tell you to go and never come back or something. But in this, getting locked in a shop like this, I can't imagine anything more embarrassing. Legitimately, I can't imagine. This is the type of thing where you want the whole ground to swallow you up. You don't even want to be alive anymore. But again, maybe just don't steal, you know? Maybe just don't steal. Maybe the thing to sort out that whole entire situation is just don't steal. Could that be possible? Is that all it takes? Just don't steal. Who knows? Anyways, moving on. So this is a really interesting article courtesy of The Guardian, talking about how Britain's staycation boom may be over. I'm surprised, not of course, but allegedly there was a boom. I think it was around just after the pandemic or around the pandemic, where people were looking for places to go because they were fed up of staying at home all day and we couldn't travel abroad. So, you know, places around the UK were becoming way more in demand to go and travel to and have your little vacations. But I think we all kind of collectively forgot why we don't do that anyway, especially Londoners. Or maybe everybody, forget London. No, I think London specifically, because London's a shit city overall. I think if you live outside of London, you probably enjoy the UK better because you have, you know, you have a lot of countryside, you have a lot of hikes you can go on, different type of areas and shit. I think up north you have the ability to enjoy different types of sceneries. In the UK, there's only one scenery, and that's like concrete, right? Nothing else but concrete. But I think other parts of the UK, you get to mix it up a bit. Anyway, Londoners for the long time, you know, are kind of looked down upon because we're not really that, you know, clued up on other parts of the UK, myself included. We don't really travel outside of the UK much, outside of London much. So that's why we all kind of tend to go outside of the UK when we go on our holidays. But when COVID happened, we didn't have the option to do that. So we had to vacation at home, and that became a big thing. But we soon realized why we don't do it, because it's really expensive. It's so insane that in some occasions it's more expensive to book a return ticket from London, where I am, to Manchester, than it is to go from where I am right now in London to Madrid, to Barcelona, to Paris, to Lille, to Lisbon, to Porto, to Budapest, to Krakow. I swear you could get a return flight from London to Krakow over the weekend that will cost less than you taking a train from London to fucking Liverpool. That's how crazy it is. And don't get started on like Airbnbs and hotels, UK wise. Fucking nuts how expensive they are. So it's really pricey when you start to figure out, oh, I want to go to Bournemouth, I want to go to Bath, I want to go to Dorset, I want to go to Bristol, I want to go to Devon. All these are fucking lovely places, right? Nottingham, Leeds, whatever. But the trip tickets, the flights are quite expensive, or the train tickets are really expensive, which is why we, most of us, tend to go to Europe, other places of Europe. But the other really fucked up thing about it is that because a lot of us don't travel within our, you know, our shores, that doesn't help the economy outside of London. So all the money is focused, all the resources are focused in London. The government, quote unquote, headquarters, all the government things are run through London. So up north and surrounding counties, whatever, you know, they all get ignored. So those places don't have as much money pumped into them as London do, because people don't travel and go and share things there, which is really sad, because one of the reasons why people are really looking forward to the HS2 trains, right, that got cancelled, when those HS2 trains, when that HS2 line, sorry, was cancelled, that's what a lot of people are really pissed off about, because the HS2 would have been an amazing thing, because it would have connected parts of London to parts of the to the middle of England, to the north, very quickly, so that you could have had people legitimately commuting from Manchester to London to work, or deciding to move their job or whatever to other parts of the UK because they had a high-speed rail. But the high-speed rail got cancelled last minute, you know, because the UK government is fucking bullshit. But essentially, this high-speed rail would have legitimately changed the entire fabric of this country and really spread the wealth across across from, like, you know, the south all the way up to the north. But now it's all concentrated down here, which is probably why the staycations have completely, you know, bottled down, because it's just too expensive to travel. So let's actually read the article itself. It says, is Britain's staycation boom over? Short-term holiday rentals experienced a surge in recent years, especially during the pandemic, when Britain stayed at home in the UK, leading to a spike in the rates. However, holiday let owners across the UK are reporting a significant fall in bookings so far this year, as the sector feels the effects of the cost of living crisis, poor weather, and increasingly saturated market. I'll just say it's a return to normality. I just say, a regular person, no matter how much money you have, if somebody offers you a 200 euro ticket to go from London to Paris for the weekend, or a 150 price ticket to go from here to Newcastle, you're going to pick Paris. So that's the real issue at hand. Even if they'll live, you know, Paris is still so expensive to live and to kind of do your day-to-day shit, no one in their right mind would choose going to Paris over the weekend for £200, then going to Newcastle 150. Makes no sense. It continues. Helen Angoff, 58, managing director of Woodland Collection Hills Holidays in Townsend, Cornwall, about 10 miles from the tourist hotspots of St. Ives, said the demand in January and February fell by 80%. Bro, people who run hotels and shit, like, what a horrible business in one side. Because if the mood changes, the trend changes, your business is done and you have nothing. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't cut prices. You can't do renovations to attract more people, because you don't have the money to attract more people. And if you do it, you're just going to be in the hole for more. Like, running a hotel is like a risky business, isn't it? Like, if the market changes, you are fucked. 80%. Full. Fucking hell. This year, we had hardly any bookings at all in January or February. March and April bookings are down by 20%. She attributes much of the sluggish demand to poor weather. So many people are fed up with the wet weather. They are going abroad to get some sunshine. The second big factor is the massive oversupply of holiday lets. A lot of people thought that they could make easy money because of what happened during COVID. I think that's true, partly. But I just think in general, it's just too expensive to travel in the UK. It just is. It's just always been crazy expensive. Like, the Airbnbs in some locations in the UK will literally make your eyes bleed. Like, in Dorset, Devon and shit, you could easily rack up £1,000 for like a shit, you know, not a shit area, but it's like, bruh, this isn't the Seychelles. This isn't Florence. Do you know what I mean? Like, what? This isn't fucking Valencia, you know? What the hell? It continues. Data supplied by AirDNA, which tracks listing and holiday rentals on sites like Airbnb and Vrbo, found that 342,000 short-term lets available in the UK in 12 months were up 19% of previous years. New listings for homes in the UK jumped 22%. Yvonne Turnbull, 58, who lives in Horsham, West Sussex, has been letting out her three-bedroom apartment in Scarborough, North Yorkshire, for between 150 and 175. Including Airbnb for the past 6 years. She said demand was significantly down on previous years, with no bookings for January, February or March, including half term, fewer bookings over the Easter. Turnbull says that Scarborough has now oversupplied with lets. When we started, there were 200 Airbnbs in town. Now you're looking at 1,000. God damn. So maybe there is an over demand, oversupply, and not enough demand for the supply. Jesus Christ. Nor is the problem limited to seaside destinations. Vive, which offers short-term rentals, has seen a 21% drop in bookings across the UK, or London, sorry, more than 500 properties from January to 19th of March since the same period of last year. The lack of bookings is another hit on the holiday let industry after the government introduced increased regulation and announced a tax relief from April 2025. New controls on holiday lets in England will be introduced this summer, including a mandatory national registration scheme, and councils be given greater powers if they want to use short-term lets. Martin Dunford, founder of accommodation sites Cool Places, says inquiries for UK self-catering accommodation were slightly down from last year, but higher than before the pandemic. We're finding that people are more careful. They have less money, tend to book later, watch the weather, and try to get more out of their money. Okay, this probably makes a lot of sense. I would really believe a scenario where a lot of people, even some of you guys that don't live in the UK, I could imagine a lot of you are probably travel fatigued. I know I am. I never was that guy, but I don't look forward to the plane journeys anymore. Not because of the journey of the plane, just the whole hassle. Getting to the airport, the immigration thing, waiting for your fucking flight to board, getting on, walking on the thing, waiting to sit down, putting your thing on the top, the whole fucking shebang with the fucking emergency whatever thing when the plane crashes on your flight. It's taxing, right? It's literally a day worth of fucking activities you're doing, and it's super, super draining. So I don't look forward to the actual travel part of the holiday. The holiday itself I look forward to. I don't really mind coming back either. I don't really get holiday blues like that. I just don't like the actual travel itself. So maybe there are a lot of people in the UK who would rather spend the extra money to travel in the UK and not have the hassle of having to pack a luggage a certain way, separate all their fucking, you know, aerosols, and not have any fucking creams of a certain, you know, a certain fucking weight that they can't put in their bag, having to pay extra money for the baggage if it goes overweight, all this sort of shit. It's just stressful. It's just annoying. So I can understand a scenario where people are willing to spend the extra money just to not put up with that hassle. Me personally, I couldn't do it because I love, you know, the ability to go abroad and enjoy myself and let my hair down and not be in this fucking, you know, shithole of a country. But I see how other people are doing it. It continues. Miriam Vangus, 60, her husband have run a one-bedroom holiday cottage in the 18-acre small holdings of St. Clair's in Wales for the past 17 years. She said people were demanding a lot more for their money. They expect more of a hotel experience. Now we see a huge number of requests for hot tubs, wood burners, which seem to be deal breakers. Trend change. That's insane. Imagine you're booking a little cottage somewhere and you're requesting that they have a hot tub and a fucking wood burner. People are fucking insane with their requests, man. What you see on my listing is what I've got, fucker. Do you want to rent my place or not? If you don't, fuck off. A wood burner or a hot tub. She added, we have considered long-term letting, and that's something we may revisit. Selling up may become a necessity depending on whether things pick up. But yeah, our staycations in the UK are completely down. I understand it. I'm due to go to Wuppertal in Germany very soon at the end of May. And so far, the entire trip is going to cost me, including, you know, flights and accommodation, probably £300. And I don't think I don't think there's a single place I could go to in the UK that's nice, right? Not just a shithole place that I could go to for the weekend that's £300. I don't think so. Maybe for the day I could find one maybe for two nights, but for the weekend, as in you arrive on Friday, leave on Monday, doesn't exist. That's how crazy it is. So I'm taking my money, I'm spending it abroad, which obviously is hurting our economy and fucking up, you know, local economy in general, and obviously not helping quote unquote tourism. But, you know, it is what it is. It kind of is what it blood clot is. Moving on. We got this interesting clip, courtesy of The Art of Dialogue. It features Eddie Griffin saying the raids on Diddy's homes for sex trafficking were staged, and he believes that Clive Davis and the head of Universal Music Group are somehow involved. This, to me, is a clear example of that thing I remember my parents telling me ages ago. I think it might have been my dad, something along the lines of, oh, just because you're older doesn't mean you're smarter or you're wiser. Like, age doesn't beget fucking wisdom. They're two completely separate things. Just because you've been on the earth longer doesn't mean you're smarter or you know what you're talking about. And I think this is another example of it. But then it also is another example of the weird self-induced paranoia, conspiracy theory laden syndrome a lot of older black dudes have with this Diddy thing. And I wonder if it's like if it's a guilty conscious, because maybe they took part in some of the freak-offs, maybe they did their own freak-offs back in the day. But I've noticed a certain caliber, a certain age bracket, boomer, black dude, industry veteran, they have some very bizarre takes when it relates to the fucking Diddy thing. Like, super insane. Like, legitimately, like, you're thinking, hold on, like, is this guy okay? Does he have all his faculties? Like, why is he saying this? And I'm beginning to wonder, is this a guilty conscience? Are these guys actually redacted? Like, what's actually going on here? Let me play this clip for you so you can see what's going on. But I swear to God, this legitimately is one of the most insane clips I've ever seen, because this guy seems to be quite smart, but he's actually talking out of his ass. So this is Eddie Griffin, legendary comedian and obviously comedic actor, talking about the Diddy shit.
Well, Clive Davis, yeah, that's the monster. And the head of Universal Music Group, what's this motherfucker's name? See, he's put Diddy up, and they sacrificing Diddy. They said, nigga, you gotta take this shit, cause we can't be involved. But Diddy smart. He filmed every fuck session, so he was fucking Clive and the motherfucking Freak Boy that run Universal Music Group. So he got them on some fuck tapes. Now that's why they raided the house, because they got.
So Diddy was smart because he fucked the guys that were trying to blackmail him, recorded it while also allegedly raping people and while allegedly also involving himself in sex trafficking. He was smart though. Okay, let's keep on going.
Friends in Homeland Security and the feds, and they said, get in there and get them tapes from this nigga. He's trying to blackmail us. That's what I believe is going on. Because, you know,
he's even got old man voice, right? He's even got that old man cadence. That accent even sounds like an older dude. He probably isn't even that old, I wouldn't imagine, but he sounds like a fucking dinosaur talking absolute shit.
Homeland Security, they came in there with tanks down there, motherfucking military motherfuckers, 25 deep, 30 deep for one dancing nigga. Say what? One dancing nigga.
That one dancing nigga has been accused of some pretty heinous crimes, Eddie Griffin. He's not being accused of, you know, some white collar shit. He's not being accused of running a couple red lights. He's not being accused of, you know, a couple of five finger discounts in Target. He's been allegedly accused of rape, you know, people trafficking, other drug offenses, some other shit. It's pretty heavy charges. Again, they're just charges, you know, at the moment. Nothing's been proven. Oh, no, they're not even charges. They're what people have been saying in, you know, in what is in lawsuits, actually. You know, accusations in lawsuits, not actually charges. No actual charges have been brought against them just yet. But I wonder what these guys will say. Will their tunes change if and when Diddy does get charged?
You're going to have 50 goddamn troops at his goddamn mansion. It's not Suge Knight. It's Diddy, y'all. He going to dance them to death? I mean, what the fuck?
Properties owned by Diddy were raided yesterday by Homeland Security as part of an ongoing...
Also, this is a very boomer setup, isn't it? He's watching the laptop on his laptop. He's got a massive giant screen behind him, a TV that's probably way too big for his stature and the room. It makes him look like a fucking... literally like a midget. It's all over the place. So maybe the setup tells you everything about what type of shit this guy's going to be talking.
Investigation into the
mogul
who's been accused of sexual...
Now, isn't it ironic that, you know, HSI's there, the military motherfucking...
What's ironic about that?
Security is... Man, this is anyway.
Is that how that works?
The militarization of the police department has just gotten out of fucking hand.
If there's one thing that black people, especially a particular age bracket of black people, know to talk about, is police. We seem to have a real encyclopedic knowledge about police procedures, you know, all this sort of nonsense, right? You can quote that shit like the back of our hand, but, you know, ask some of these motherfuckers to balance a checkbook. Ask some of these motherfuckers about, you know, ISIS and shit. Ask some of these motherfuckers about stocks and other types of investments. Ask them about property and taxes, you know. Ask them about, you know, details about being a fucking landlord, business owner. No information. But when it comes to fucking talking ad nauseum about the, you know, police, what did he call it? What's a phrase that they like to use all the time? They love to fucking overuse that phrase. The militarization of the police department. It's like, come on, man.
Hey, motherfucking Homeland Security Institute.
Man, militarization of the police department.
The militarization of the police department has just gotten out of fucking hand. Now these motherfuckers got on army gear like they going to war at somebody's mansion, right? Now, part two of this. I mean, what the fuck? What the fuck? You gonna tear up the man's house? It's just, and you didn't put shit back to where you found it. You sons of bitches. I want to know who told the camera crews that they were going down there to raid his house.
Isn't Diddy a noteworthy celebrity? Isn't it happening in LA and Miami, all these other places? Leaks happen. How do you think they get hold of police reports, mugshots? Like, come on, bro. Like, use your brain.
They already said
there's some big conspiracy to bring Diddy down. Like, it's not that deep. He's a high profile figure. He's very famous. He lives in a pretty bait place anyway. People probably knew his address before his house got raided. It wasn't like it was a secret. Like, what's this guy talking about?
Had the motherfucking satellites, the helicopters, that all over the top, nigga, to get the aerial view. I mean, just to sensationalize the story. This is what I'm saying. Somebody's behind this shit. It's staged, right?
It's staged.
Because if
you get your house gets raided by the feds and it's staged. Who's it staged by? Fair enough. Say this about fucking Jeffrey Epstein. Cool, but did he? What's Diddy now? Is he like a member of the fucking Israeli special forces or something? Is that what you're trying to say? Fucking Diddy was in Mossad. All right.
If it's really just a quick, fast hit on the motherfucker's property, nigga, you ain't going to call the press and say we about to hit Puffy's crib. You're just going to hit the crib.
No, you're going to do that because you're going to bring attention and you're also going to put pressure on the person that you're trying to, language for something. Maybe he might run. That might force your hand. It's a good tactic, actually, especially if somebody's high profile, to blast it all over the media like this. You want to either catch them by surprise or you want to let everybody know ahead of time to see what they do as a reaction. And judging by what we saw, I think Diddy did try to run, but I think his lawyers told him to come back. I think when we saw him on the plane the same day his house got raided, he happened to leave early in the morning, jump on his jet to go somewhere in the fucking Caribbean. I think he did try to run. But his lawyers were able to talk sense into him. Somebody in his family told him, hey, take a deep breath. Wherever you are, stop right now. Let me speak to you. And kind of ran him through the play. And was like, look, unless they charge you with something, this is going to look fucking crazy. And you're going to look even more guilty than what you probably already are. Come back home right now. And he did. And then guess what he did when he came back home? He was dancing. He was being super visible. He was riding his bike along the streets and stuff like a regular civilian. Like, come on, man. I think he did try and run away, but somebody luckily told him to come back and he listened.
And they just don't have to hear about that through the grapevine and rush down there as quick as they can. But no, we've seen the aerial shot of them driving up and arriving at this motherfucker's crib. Somebody's behind it, somebody way up the ladder. And I think that ladder is the head of Universal Music Group.
They really wanted to be a big conspiracy because I think part of them wants to look smart because they've broken it down, and they also want somebody that they look up to be so important that the head of Universal Music Group want to bring him down, and Biden and the Electoral College and Zelensky, they want to tie it to all these nonsense things to make themselves appear smarter for breaking it down, and to also give the person who they're talking about a bit of props, because like, oh, this person we look up to, they're obviously a big deal because look what they got involved in and look how it turned out. I think that's what's happening. Honestly, I think that's what's happening. It's odd to say it. It really doesn't make any sense in some ways, but I think that's what we're seeing right now. These weird dudes are like getting, oddly enjoying hearing the sound of their own voice while they talk about this nonsense. It's like, what the fuck is going on right here? What the fuck is going on right here? But anyway, Eddie Griffin, another proof that just because you're older, and again, how old is fucking Eddie Griffin? I actually want to check. How old is this motherfucker? Is he like 50 or 60? It doesn't prove at all just because you're older that you're fucking smart. You're not. He's 55 years old. Well, he sounds like he's fucking 75. So that makes a lot of sense that he's sounding like that. Eddie Griffin talking out of his fucking ass once again. Talking out of his fucking ass once a fucking again. Moving on, we've got this really cool clip courtesy of Tim Dillon on The Diary of the CEO, where he talks about wanting to live in London. And I have to admit, I agree a lot with his position and how he's kind of phrasing this. I've also had the same thoughts about living in London and buying a property here. I think I secretly have the hope that one day that I will buy a property here and then I'll leave. That's my major plan. My major plan is like, okay, cool. Once I actually have enough of the funds to buy a place, that might be the time that I then decide to leave. Because, you know, staying here, you know, all year round is hell in itself. So having the ability to leave after securing yourself a property is such a flex. And it's something that I would definitely, 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 100,000,000% would love to do. I swear to God, I'd love to do that. So when I hear Tim Dillon talk about it the way he did talk about it on his pod, it kind of made me think, you know what? That's probably why I like the guy, because we definitely do think the same, even though we don't look the same. And whatever it may be, we definitely, 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 definitely do think the same. So let me play this clip for you here while I get it to load up. And you can see what I mean, because Tim Dillon definitely is onto something when he was talking about this. Let me get it up on the screen so you can see this. This is Tim Dillon on The Diary of a CEO. One of our premier podcasts, actually, here in the UK. This guy's become, this guy's now become like the English version of like Joe Rogan. I'm not going to lie. It's become one of the most popular ones. It's actually overtaken True Geordie. This guy has actually overtaken True Geordie as like the main UK podcast to kind of go on. He gets a bunch of views. A lot of people in the UK don't really like him though, unfortunately. They think he's a bit of a lemon, but he's pretty cool. I don't mind him. I'm not going to lie.
And you,
I don't mind him in the slightest. So let me actually get this loaded for you so you can see it. But I really don't mind him in the slightest. I think he's pretty cool. But he actually did have a really cool interview with fucking Tim Dillon where he spoke about his stuff. Let's see if it's loading. It is. It's actually on. Is it on the screen yet? Can we get this on there? Nope. Let's put it there. Cool. Let's go.
And you,
hopefully.
You, I think I heard you say you were thinking about potentially moving to London at one point.
I'd love to own something in London. I like One Hyde Park, but it's very expensive. And the reason that I like it is because it's the most expensive residential real estate building in the world. No one really lives there. Mm-hmm. But you see these young Saudi kids drive their Bugattis and stuff. And every now and then one or two lights is on.
That's very true. There's a part also in Stratford that has the same sort of thing, where there's these amazing buildings near Stratford Westfield Centre. If you've been there, you'd know what I mean. They're literally right next to the shopping centre. And I sometimes have been in Ubers on the way back home from that way. And you'll see, you always talk to Uber drivers, they always tell you how depressing it is coming around, how depressing it is to come around that area and drop people off, because literally they'll pull up to, you know, amazing buildings and there'll be hardly any lights on in the building at like a perfect, you know, prime time where most people are meant to be home. And then you find out through some of the residents that a lot of those flats have been bought by Russian people, other foreign people who just buy them and just kind of let them sit there. Maybe they let them out, maybe they don't, but no one actually lives there day to day. It must be quite wild to be neighbors, you know, in a building with people that don't actually live there. You're just there on your own.
And it, to me, it symbolizes the utter coldness and emptiness of having things. And I think there's a beauty to that. There's something very interesting about it. You know, that whole city of London really interests me. And I don't mean the city of London. I mean that city of London, that city within a city, which most people don't know about. But there's a great article in Vanity Fair. Read it or don't. The point is, that whole area of Knightsbridge is very interesting to me.
I'm actually going to break that article down next time I do a podcast, actually. I don't know if you remember that one, City of Inner City, courtesy of Vanity Fair.
I mean, One Eyed Park is interesting because the banality and the hollowness of extreme wealth really shocks. But we tend to, and listen, we know the rich are doing crazy things, right? The mega rich, they crazy, the yachts, the this, the that, mm-hmm. the Epstein stuff, a lot of it, mm-hmm. not good, regrettable. We understand it. Mm-hmm. There's also an element I think people don't understand, and that's the banality, how boring, how passionless a lot of people are at that level of, and that's always made me.
You would like to join the Knightsbridge crowd?
To observe, you know, they'll never let me in. That's the other thing I love about, I'm addicted to rejection, right? Since I'm six, I've been auditioning and have no. So they'll never let me in. But it's just fun to kind of look at, and you don't even want to be in per se, because it's not fun. That's the thing. It's not really that fun. But it is funny to me when I look at, like, you know, the secrecy and how, you know, some of it really is really bad, and people are doing crazy things and they're overthrowing governments, and that's probably 10% of them. And then 90% of them, it's just they're fighting extreme, suffocating boredom.
That's the truth, but I want some of that boredom. I want to be some of that boredom. I think I've always had this kind of goal in my mind. I don't really, you know, apart from obviously, you know, buying a house for my parents and stuff as a thank you for, you know, putting up with me and my little brothers as we were kind of rampaging around the house, breaking everything, arguing all the time and fighting and shit. That's obviously a good way to go. I think when it comes to myself, I've never really had that much of a desire to have my own house apart from having one in London, just as a sign that I have one, just to kind of represent all of the struggle, all of the pain, all of the fucking suffering that you go through living in this city day to day. And I think the funny thing about London, probably similar to New York, it doesn't matter what level of the socioeconomic ladder you're on, the pain and suffering affects you all in different ways, of course, but you all suffer. There is no like living in a bubble. It doesn't exist. So even people who do live in One Hyde Park, they still have to commute through London. They still have to go through dodgy parts to hit restaurants, to hit bars, to go to work, to go to meetings. It's all over the place. So I honestly do think the only, you know, way to kind of reconcile that sort of shit and kind of make you feel at one is to obviously it's to obviously get yourself a property, and then kind of it will make it almost all worth it, you know, because you've got something to show for me. And that's something I want to do, because I've, like I said, I've literally promised myself as soon as I get that property here in London, I'm leaving this fucking godforsaken city, and I'll definitely go move to like another city up north, like Manchester or something. I'd probably do that before I'd move to another location in London, because I quite like the area of London I live in. I don't think it's that bad, but I also don't want to stay here long term. But having a property here that you can let, or that you can, sorry, that you can rent out, that you can put up on Airbnb, is fucking priceless, because, you know, rates here are fucking crazy. And if you offer it, you know, a little bit under market value, you have people, you know, queuing up to stay in your home year round. I've heard it's not as easy as it sounds to be a landlord and to have properties on Airbnb. You know, tenants are fucking awful. I go out of my way to be a pretty good Airbnb guest, I think. I'm the kind of person that will clean up all my dishes, that will take up will take out the bin, that will separate the glasses. Like, if I don't have time, I'll literally have all the glasses separated and shit. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be fucking cooming all over the walls or pissing on the fucking walls or shitting on the walls. But I know some people do that. So it's not as easy as it sounds to just kind of have a property, open it up, put up Airbnb and then collect the money. But still, having that option, being that, having the ability to do that, it's still a flex. You know, it's still a flex. So big up Tim Dillon. Big up Tim Dillon. And again, I also would love to live in London one time. I think that One Hyde Park place he wants to live in is fucking gorgeous, though, by the way. Just to kind of show you what it looks like. I'm sure most of you have seen it. It's just a massive fucking building. There's also another one in Greenwich area next to the river that also is fucking awesome to check out, that people kind of live by. And it looks fucking beautiful, and it kind of overlooks all the water. But One Hyde Park, obviously, you know, it's literally next to Hyde Park, which is basically our central park in here in London. And it's right in the center of London. You basically are a 2-minute walk away from Bond Street, Oxford Circus, all these amazing places. And the properties themselves are fucking gorgeous as well, so you can't really complain that people would go out of their way to kind of try and live in these proper places. Let me see if there's actually, can we actually see if there's one rooms? Oh, look, yeah, there's actually one available. There's one property in One Hyde Park actually available to check out on rightmove.com, which is our version of, you know, Zoopla or whatever you got there in the States. So this is one of the properties listed. Again, not the best view, but this is probably one of the properties listed here. It's for 5.5 million. White Hyde Park in Knightsbridge in London. Let's see what this looks like. I'm not too fond of this view. This view is a bit mad because you don't actually see the street. You kind of see another building, you know? Not much of a view there, but still. I think it all comes fully furnished, I'd imagine, right? If you're paying 5.5 million, you better give me all this gaudy, you know, Saudi Arabian looking furniture. That looks pretty cool. You got some indoor garage. There's a Bentley there, right? So you can see how, you know, what kind of wealth we're talking about. Sculptures on the outside. Look at the reception. Wow. The reception area when you come into One Hyde Park looks like a hotel. I don't know about that, though. What do you guys think? Would you like to live in an apartment block that looks like a hotel? I don't know. I kind of want it to look kind of homely. It looks a little bit too, can I check in your bag? You know? The it's nicely furnished, good space, nice sized kitchen, not the biggest again. For 5.5 million, I want the kitchen to be a bit more substantial. It looks a little bit tight, innit? Looks a little bit tight, the kitchen. Living space in the dining room area is very clogged up. Again, the glass and the mirrored effects make it look really big. It does a good illusion, but it's quite cramped. There's a lot of, maybe I'd get rid of a lot of the furniture. There's a lot of stuff here. I might get rid of all this stuff. It's blocking all the way. There's not easy way to kind of walk through. Yeah, it's a bit gaudy. The interior design is very gaudy. Is there a pool built in, or is this okay? I think this is all the communal stuff that you can share with people. There's a squash thing. There's a gym, obviously. That's fucking fantastic. You can play golf inside. There's a restaurant also in there. You can basically stay in your room all day, every day if you wanted to. Bathroom. Yeah, 5.5 million. That is not worth it, bro. That looks kind of shit. I'm not going to lie. Interior designed by Candy and Candy. This one bedroom. That's a one bedroom apartment. That's 5.5 million. One bed apartment. Wow. On the third floor, with 1,110 square feet, includes a very rare benefit of a 120 square feet storeroom, which is fitted with wardrobes, excellent ceilings, and apartment is a net gross internal area of 989 square feet. We understand it's one of the only two one-bedroom apartments in the building with a basement storage, beautifully designed reception and dining room. I don't know, man. That doesn't look like a place that I'd want to live in. I'm not going to lie. A one-bedroom apartment for 5.5 million sounds like a fucking nightmare to me. I'm not going to lie. That sounds like an absolute nightmare. I'd want something a bit more substantial. But again, I understand why Tim Dillon want to live there. He always wants to be at a seat of luxury. So it makes a lot of sense why he definitely would be involved or interested in living in a place that looked like that. But not for me. Not for me in the slightest. Not for me in the motherfucking slightest. I'm not going to lie. I definitely wouldn't want to live there. Like, it just doesn't look that fun, really. It looks kind of good. Like, again, the interior design is the main thing that I don't like. It looks too gaudy. It looks way, 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 way too gaudy. Like, it looks like somewhere Drake would want to live, you know? Drake has a similar taste to this sort of stuff. Drake likes this sort of shit. All this shiny glass, fake marble effect stuff, right? Like, unnecessary lights, everything cramped. Every other wall is mirrored. Like, it's just, yeah. And the kitchen also is super tight. Like, that's a very stingy kitchen for 5.5 mil. That is a very stingy kitchen. You got to give me more kitchen than that for 5.5 mil. Like, come on, bro. Come on. You have to give me more than that. You have to give me more than that. You have to fucking give me more than that. That doesn't look that great. I'm not going to lie. Not for me. Not for me in the absolute slightest. I'm pretty much okay with that one. I'm pretty much okay with that one. Okay, so we did this, we did that, we did this, we did that. We also want to end it with this article, courtesy of These Links, which talks about, I think These Links is this really cool newsletter that someone put together where there are these anonymous essays that people send, newsletters, where about things that they hate. You know, perfect, because people in this world don't really have the capacity to speak at length about things they love. But if you ask them about things they hate, bloody hell, they're going to fucking chew your ear off. So this is courtesy of the Substack called These Links, D spelled D-E-E-Z, links, LINKS.com. Check it out. They've got a huge range of articles and, you know, blog posts, some sort of Substacks that you can kind of check out. This particular one, the title is "In Berlin, I Experienced X I Never Thought Possible." So let's actually go through this one, because it might be entertaining, especially considering how much I love that city and I love particularly Berghain. So the subtitle is "I Hate Berlin." Let's see what it says here. Before I moved to Berlin, I visited twice. Both trips were at the height of summer, when the sun stayed out past 9 p.m. and every park looked like a Hobbiton backyard replete with checkered picnic blankets, piles of mountain cheese and half litre beer bottles. It was nice, at least between June and September. Yeah, okay, they started off hot. This is very true. They've started off hot. It definitely is the best place to be, June through September. But the other months, ooh, which is weird, because I actually prefer to go to Berlin outside of June and September because it's too warm. I just can't handle it. and that place doesn't have, you know, places don't have good air conditioning. You know, the beer's nice because usually most places have chilled glasses, so you can enjoy a nice cool beer, a nice cold beer, but it's too warm for me. So I like to go before June or after September, but we digress. There was always a cool club to try out, and duh, anywhere is affordable compared to New York. But what I now know now is that deciding to move to Berlin purely based on the wide-eyed summer visits was kind of like watching, say, a movie trailer for a musical that doesn't make it clear that, by the way, this is a musical, and now it's too late. Oh, that's a brilliant analogy. That's a brilliant analogy, because I could imagine the amount of people who move to Berlin based on the summers, because literally the summers in Berlin are like summers in London. They're fucking magical. But the summers in London are not representative of your whole entire year experience in London at all. Zero. I think the same could be said for most cities around the world. But I think particular with Berlin and London being so dreary and wet, especially Berlin, it's actually way more. I think we have a bit more of a soggier, damp, you know, environment, but I think Berlin has a scenery where it's all grey. It's a very ugly city. Like I said, like, the architecture is horrendous. Every other wall, like, I don't know, graffiti, I don't think there's any rules in graffiti in Berlin. I think, I remember here in London, there's like rules with graffiti where you're not meant to graff up residential homes and shit. But it doesn't exist in Berlin. People graff anything. Anything with a wall gets fucking spray painted, and they don't try and clean it off. So everywhere looks like a fucking bomb site. Everywhere looks like a squat. It's fucking crazy. It continues. Granted, moving anywhere involves a period of post-U-Haul clarity, but I'm holding from in the belief that Berlin Granted, moving anywhere involves a period of post-U-Haul clarity, but I'm holding firm on the belief that Berlin does a frightfully better job of hiding its shortcomings than anywhere else. It's been 8 years since I've moved here, and I'm still finding new things to cringe at every day. Take the white people here, for instance. I have possibly never seen so many white people with dreadlocks. They are everywhere, and they're always asking me things like, why can't I say the N-word if it's in a song? Or explaining how they're colorblind, or wondering why their sushi tastes like weird. Why their sushi rice tastes weird. That's very true. You do find a lot of those kind of guys over there. Should you be able to shrug off the casual racism of these ultra modern liberal Berliners, you still won't escape the city's overlay of graffiti, which, rather than convincing some quality of ambient cosmopolitanism, rock sort of the dens the soul. Clit, love is here, graffiti is liberty. It's not giving counterculture so much as its sensibility of a boomer director of a legacy non-profit. In Berlin, I experienced icks that I never thought possible, but the graffiti is still better than the state of advertisements, blowjob for free, proclaims an ad for reusable bowls. A poster for a high ABV beer featuring a giant pink vagina promises to be the most illegal beer in the world. The other day, I wandered into an art gallery in the heart of Berlin, and the exhibition du jour was an artist recording a recent orgy. Brilliant. Berlin, baby. This is a city infected with preteen ideas of being edgy. That's very true. They definitely think they're doing a thing when they have a model walk down the runway naked, or when they have some guy walking down the street in just a pair of sandals, or when the artwork itself is a fucking, you know, a pudding on the floor with a spoon that looks like it's been covered in shit. Like, and it's just fucking, all right, like, give it up, man. We understand. This is a piece that's fucking talking directly about the war in Ukraine. Okay, we get it, but fuck off. I could go on about the lack of taste. For example, Berlin is home to the worst dressed people in the world. Everyone looks like they've been assaulted at a thrift store. But coincidentally, this thrift store only carried everything two sizes too big. In time, one learns that the bad outfits there do draw attention away from the even worse haircuts. No one on the planet besides Zendaya should be attempting micro bangs. And you know what's really funny about the looks? I think that's part of the beauty of it. I think that's what makes club culture specifically, or nightlife, way more fun there. Because people actually go to have fun and don't go under the premise or under the assumption that they're going to show out, they're going to stunt, they're going to shut it down, it's all about me. It's almost a weirdly collective feeling when you're going out. Like, you're going out on your best behavior to make other person to make your time fun, and then by default that makes other people who you don't know's time fun, blah blah blah. It's a weird thing. But most importantly, I think doing away with the need to wear particular items, apart from the psychos that go to Berghain and want to dress all black to try and get in, most people go, and essentially it's quite freeing because you don't feel like you are obliged to, you know, present a certain image. You're not obliged. You don't feel like you're going to be judged if you wear a certain item. It's almost quite free, especially for adults who need permission. I don't ever. I wear what the fuck I want. But adults that need permission to do certain things feel very free, feel very liberated when they go to Berlin, because it does allow you to kind of do what the fuck you want and no one bats an eyelid. Whether it's you wearing, you know, a skirt as a fucking jumper, or if you're wearing tights as gloves, whatever you want to do, people won't even care. So that's probably one thing why it makes it actually a fun city to be in and live in. It continues. But the worst part of Berlin, or Germany in general, has got to be the workplace. No one, neither Americans nor Germans, will agree with me on this, but I staunchly believe that 30 vacation days per year is too many vacation days. Throw a rock at any Berlin workplace and you can bet it's rife with absenteeism and chaos. Okay, because I guess this person's American. How many vacation days do fucking Americans get? What the fuck are they talking about? How many? Let's see. I'm curious to see this. Vacation days in the USA. You guys get 10 only. Typically, US employers will allocate 10 paid vacations per year to each employee, increasing the days provided based on the amount of time. So it's like how we are in the UK. Every year you stay with a company, it adds one more year to your vacation or something after a certain year. 10 days. No fucking way, bro. Is this 10 days including, let me check the chat. Guys, is it 10 days including public holidays, or is that excluding public holidays? Please don't tell me it's including. Please don't tell me it's including. Is it 10 days excluding public holidays? Because 10 days is fucking insane. Let me know what you guys say in the stream chat. I'm very curious to hear this. 10 days. Bro, if we take off 10 days, we come back and get fired. Wow. It's more like free paid time off. And the rest of them is not paid off time. Wow, man, I've got to shut the fuck up then. I take it for granted. I think in the UK, we have like 26. If they get 30, we have, I think 30 is including the public holidays. So yeah, so we get 28. We get 28, but that also includes public holidays. For the most part. Wow. That is insane, bro. Okay, yeah, we get 28, but I think 28, it does include public holidays. Yeah, it does include bank holidays. Bank holidays can be included in the minimum. Yeah, exactly. All work, exactly. All work. So in the UK, bank holidays are included in the 28, which makes complete sense. But wow, bro, you guys get only 10 days of vacation. 10 days of on top of public holidays. Okay, cool. That's why they say Americans know nothing about countries. No time, no money to travel. Okay, you know what, Dan Sol? That makes a lot of sense now. The lack of curiosity Americans have about other countries isn't lack of intelligence. It's just because you don't have time to worry about that shit. You have to pay your bills. You have to fucking pay your taxes. You have to fucking pay your land dues, all that short nonsense you got in the States, your health insurance. You literally have to do so much to keep the lights on. You can't be worried about what's going on in fucking Sudan, or what's happening in Greece, or the fucking immigration situation in Sweden. Like, that's not something you're fucking worried about, because you literally have so much on your brain. 10 days of vacation is nutty, though. Absolutely nutty. I couldn't believe that. But I also don't agree with this writer who says they think 30 days is too much. Would you guys agree that 30 vacation days per year is too many vacation days? I guess if you're the owner of the business, probably. Because if you have a business and you have 100 employees and they all have 30 days of vacation, it's going to be quite a torturous task to navigate and coordinate who goes on holiday when. Obviously, in regular places, no two people from one team go on holidays at the same time. But you still have to So how do you have, you know what I mean? How do you make sure that half the office isn't away at a particular total time at the same time? It's a bit hard, but then you also can't deny people they actually want to go away and they've put in their request early. So it's a fucked up thing. But I personally think that's why we have good work-life balance though. That's probably why we don't earn enough money. We complain about the money we make in the UK compared to you guys in the States, but you guys also work way harder than we do around the clock, especially without, you know, holiday and, you know, paid holiday. We take way more time off. We have way more liberties with sick leave and shit. So it makes sense why you guys are where you are. It continues. This is what happens when people are constantly going away on hikes or visits to friends in Switzerland and Vienna. Trust me when I say that I have successfully worked at 4 separate Berlin-based companies and I've never had to do more than 2 actual days of work per week. Wow. Now that I mention it, I don't even think I'm totally positive about that at my current boss. Or what's that? I don't think what my current boss actually looks like. It's been a while. Sorry. Now that I mention it, I don't even think that I'm totally positive about what my current boss actually looks like. It's been a while. This sounds awesome in theory, if you're the type of person unconcerned with wanting to contribute meaningfully to society. But the end result is that everyone is in a little bit of a pissy, passive-aggressive ness at all times. Sorry, really? Listen to that again. This sounds awesome in theory, if you're the type of person who is unconcerned with wanting to contribute meaningfully to society. But the end result is that everyone is a little bit pissy, passive-aggressive all the time. Now, no one knows what everyone else does, and nothing else gets done. I have learned 0 new skills, absorbed almost no good art, but okay, last weekend in Vienna was pretty great. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if we are more pissy and passive-aggressive in Europe or in the UK compared to our US counterparts. I don't think that's true. I think all workplaces, people get pissy and passive-aggressive. Probably you guys, I've heard people say when they've worked with offices in the US, you guys are too like, ha ha ha, like golden retrievery. Everyone's laughing and too many pleasantries. It's like a bit too much positivity. Like, I remember someone's actually telling me, like, one thing they noticed about working with American people was that they love positivity. Like, they don't like bad news. Like, the manager doesn't want to hear it. Like, tell me the bad news to one side, but don't announce it to the team. You know what I mean? We have to manage expectations. It's like, what? Like, they're going to find out anyway. Like, why are we, you know what I mean? Let's treat them like adults. Like, nah, tell me to the side. You know what I mean? Don't ever spread bad news in public. I don't know. I found that to be a bit odd. But one thing I've learned from this article is that American people earn their money. You guys only have 10 days of paid vacation. You guys really make your money. You earn every money you make out there. It doesn't matter where you work. The fact that you're working all year round and only have 10 days you can take possibly. But like Koila mentioned in the chat, it's not like you can take 10 days in a row. If you do take 10 days in a row, you might not come back to a job. You know, so you run that risk as well. So you guys definitely earn your skrilla for sure. You don't, you know, fuck me, bro. 10 days. 10 days. It's absolutely crazy. Big up Eduardo. Listening to AZ is the closest I've got to going overseas. Oh, what do you say? Jack Donny, he says, stop saying it's 10. Dude, 10 is not a national figure. So what is a national figure then, my friend? If it's not 10, let me know. If I got it wrong, let me know. What is a national, let's say, national figure of vacation days in US? It said 10, but let's see. How many vacations did you get in the USA? 11 days of paid vacation per year in the private sector. An average number of paid vacation days after 5 years increases to 15. After 10 years to 17. So the more you work somewhere, the more vacation days you get. Well, unfortunately, we're in somewhat of a recession. So it's probably fair to say a lot of people aren't going to be working in companies for 10 plus years going forward. It's just not going to be common. So, you know, the ability to go and have 11 days is not going to happen, or 17. There's no legally mandated vacation time in the UK. In the US, oh my God, you guys, how is that possible? How do you guys work in this place? What? No legal mandate for vacation. Let's see. There's no legal. Oh my God. No legal LDA mandate for vacation days in US. All 50 states where vaccines. No, vacation. I don't want to say vaccines. Vacation. Vacation days. Let's see what that says. In the US, there is no law requiring employers to provide... Wow. Paid leave is a perk.
Oh my fucking
God. All respect to my US listeners. My US watchers and US listeners, I respect you guys immensely. There is no legal requirement for an employer to provide any paid leave of any kind. Paid leave is a perk used to attract quality employees. Wow. Big up Jack Donaghy Jr. Wow. I'm blown away. I'm honestly blown away by this. There's no legal requirement. Oh my God. I would, like, we are so soft in the UK and Europe. We're so soft. We are so fucking soft because I think I would break down in tears at my work, at my desk, in the toilet, at the coffee machine, if I found out that I didn't have any paid leave. I would break down in tears. Literally break down in tears. Wow. Oh my God. And the funny thing is, in the UK, like, that paid leave that I told you about, the 28 days, that applies across the board. Even if you work at fucking McDonald's, you can still get 28 days of fucking holiday, or maybe 26, but definitely in the 20s. How's that make you? Do you know how nuts I must sound to an American person that you get 20 plus days of paid leave working full time at McDonald's? It makes sense though, because, you know, you're working at McDonald's. Probably the one place you'd want to go on holiday is when you're working at McDonald's. But imagine if you're working in the US, there is no holidays. You turn up every day, you're on shift, you turn up, holidays don't exist. You make it work, you figure it out. We are so soft in the UK. We're really soft now. We're really fucking soft. I swear, we're soft as fuck. Because I swear, if you worked in McDonald's, let's see, McDonald's UK, McDonald's UK paid leave, vacation day. So you watch, it's probably 26, same. Yeah, see, hourly paid employees, see, in the UK, hourly paid employees are entitled to 28 days per year, which is prorated for part-time. So obviously, if you're part-time, you know, they break it up based on the hours you work. Holiday pay is accrued as employees work. So you can work at fucking McDonald's and get 28 days of holiday per year. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Honestly, man. Yeah, exactly. Pray for us, AZ. Especially those of us living in the South. Yeah, I pray for all of you guys. Honestly, my respect for you guys has gone up immensely. Now that I've learned this, even though I respected you guys anyway, but sometimes I'd throw these, like, unnecessary little barbs. Oh my God, the US people, you guys. Meh, meh, meh. Now I get it. Now it all makes sense how you guys are the way you are. No legal requirement for paid leave and you still turn up to work every day. Get it done. Pay the bills. Every day, every day, every day. Rain or shine, every day. Driving miles and miles and miles. Bus, train. Fuck. Yeah, exactly. That's why we're crazy. And the only thing you have to look forward to is your fucking, you know, your weekends. If that, right? If that. Because I imagine, like, most, you know, jobs, it depends how your fucking rota's done. Is it Sunday to Sunday? Is it Monday to Sunday? Like, you know, sometimes your day off is on a wet, like, whatever. You make it work. Wow. That's also why when you guys let your hair down, you let your hair down, innit? This makes a lot more sense now. When you guys let your hair down and you want to party, you fucking go crazy because every other time you're working. Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. What an incredible article. But again, check out these links. I really like this page. Amazing. All these anonymous blogs they put up on there. I'm going to probably read another one about menswear on the next podcast, which is this one here. And there's another one too that I want to check out about Brooklyn as well. But there's all these quality, articles on this site called These Links. It's a collection of, you know, hate-filled essays on Substack. So definitely check it out. An amazing article here. Taught me a lot about Berlin and also taught me a lot about fucking America and how difficult it is to fucking live there. And, you know, how hardened you... That also makes a lot of sense why you guys survived so much abroad. When you guys do decide to work abroad, it makes a lot of sense why Americans are so good at it. because, you know, look what you put up with day to day living in where you guys live. So when you come to Europe, it's like a fucking, you know, it's like a walk in a park, literally and figuratively. When you come to the US, it's like a fucking walk in a park. Nothing is that hard for you anymore because you have to put up, we have to put up with. So big up everybody, you know, over there. I respect you guys fucking immensely. Fucking hell, what a fucking crazy place to be. But anyway, that has been the Axel and Ziggy Show, episode number 767. If it's your first time checking out the show, thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure to have your company. If you're listening via the audio side of the podcast, please make sure you like the stream down below. If you're listening to this via the audio side of the podcast, then all you have to do, if you listen to the audio side of the podcast, is press my fucking, what you call it? Give me a little 5-star review on wherever you listen to podcasts. That'd be greatly, greatly appreciated. So please make sure you give me a 5-star review wherever you guys listen to fucking podcasts. That'll be much, much, much appreciated. If you're watching this show live via YouTube, I will play for you my tune of the day. My tune of the day is by the one and only Maggie Rogers, courtesy of her new album. The track is called So Sick of Dreaming. So that's going to be my outro track for those of you who are, you know, listening to the fucking or watching or viewing this stream in real time via whatever means you're listening to. You will hear me play Maggie Rogers, So Sick of Dreaming. So you'll hear that play in the background here as I kind of sign out. For those rest of you who are around, thank you for chilling. It's been a fucking fun time. And I'll see most of you guys again very, very shortly for another episode of the fucking Random Show, which is going to be coming at you in about 20 minutes. So if you want to check that out, then obviously keep an eye on my channel. And I'll put another link up there in a minute for the Random Show happening very, very, very soon. But obviously, we're going to sign out with a bit of fucking Maggie Rogers for the sake of it. Why the fuck not? And then I'll see you guys on the other side very, very soon. But thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure, never a chore. I'll see most of you guys again very shortly. But for those of you I don't, take care, be safe, and be well. I'm so sick of dreaming.
Went to meet my friends down the street.